Well, the U.S. is on a roll when it comes to making threats yet again. The U.S. has threatened Damascus ahead of a reported Syrian operation in the country's southwest province of Daraa. The State Department has expressed concern over the impending military operation in one of the de-escalation zones and says that Washington will take firm and appropriate measures in case of what it described as a ceasefire violation. What could be causing the U.S.'s concern is that Daraa borders the occupied Golan Heights, which Israel has used to treat wounded militants for years. The territory's return to Syrian government control would effectively cut the much-reported collaboration between Israel and the militants, and even a deal, a blow to Tel Aviv's plans to annex the Golan Heights. Stay with us for more on that on tonight's debate.
The United States threatened Syria with what it called firm measures ahead of a reported Syrian military operation in the country's southwest. On Friday, the U.S. State Department released a statement threatening Damascus that it would take firm and appropriate measures in case of what it described as a ceasefire violation. The statement came after a war monitoring group reported that the Syrian troops were moving toward the southern province of Daraa after their victory against Daesh terrorists in the south of Damascus. It said the Syrian Air Force dropped leaflets across the area calling on terrorists to surrender. Daraa is divided between a variety of factions. About 30% of the area is controlled by the Syrian army and its allied forces, while the rest is in the hands of foreign-backed militants and the Daesh terror group. Syria's upcoming operation has upset Washington as the U.S. has been aiding forces opposed to Damascus ever since the conflict broke out in the country in 2011.
But they really have no legal or written word left to stand on. And in the first place, the U.S. is illegally occupying Syria and illegally supporting terrorists in the country.
Before taking office as U.S. President, Donald Trump had time and again criticized the then-President Barack Obama for sending American troops to Syria. After becoming U.S. President, he went on to declare the U.S. withdrawal from Syria in March.
We spent, and I was against it from the beginning. They try and say, well, maybe not. I was against it from the beginning. And by the way, we're knocking the hell out of ISIS. We'll be coming out of Syria, like, very soon. Let the other people take care of it now.
The recent statement, however, shows that the U.S. troops may not leave the Arab country anytime soon. This isn't the first time that Trump has a change of heart regarding U.S. role in Syria. The U.S. has targeted Syrian positions several times under Trump. Damascus has repeatedly called the U.S. troops' presence in the country illegal and in violation of its sovereignty. With Iran and Russia's support and government troops' ongoing efforts to liberate militant-held areas to end the conflict in the country, the U.S. meddling could lead to nothing but further escalation in the region.
Well, joining us for tonight's debate, we have TV journalist Mr. Sayed Mohsen Abbas, who's with us from the British capital, London, and also president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Mr. Michael Lane, joining us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in London, Mr. Abbas. So what do you make of this recent U.S. threat, and why would the U.S. be concerned with these operations?
Well, this is in line with, I think, the U.S. support for Israel. And ultimately, this statement is really all about backing up Israel. Israel can't really get involved directly within that region because it would suck it into a head-on collision, which I think would not be, obviously, on a global level, wouldn't be in its interests. The image just isn't right. But the U.S. has a track record. It's already involved there in Syria, albeit illegally. They support the Kurds in the east, and they've effectively annexed 20 to 25% of Syrian territory there. But what's really important here is that nothing that happens in Syria now is to do with just the internal situation. Anywhere President Assad moves now in terms of reconquering territory from the insurgents or the foreign-backed mercenaries, what he's effectively doing is taking on either Israel and Jordan, as is the case in Daraa, or he's taking on the interests of Turkey and perhaps even Russia up in Idlib. In the east, he'd be taking on the interests directly of the US and their sort of Kurdish proxies. So actually, anything that happens in Syria now is on a more dangerous level because it involves a geopolitical, if you like, factor. But Israel is basically, I think, again, behind this US statement. They simply don't want that southern region to be given back to President Assad.
Let's go over to our guests in Washington, Mr. Michael Lane. Mr. Lane, what are your thoughts on the recent comments coming from the U.S.? Are they trying to impede the advance of the Syrian army, or do you think otherwise?
Well, I think my colleague got a lot of this exactly right. I agree with much of what he said. But you have to go back a little bit, and that is to the time when Russia and Jordan and the United States got together and created the de-escalation zone in southwest Syria to give the opportunity for things to cool off there, which, you know, essentially it was not a hot part of the battlefront, and it was one of the easier things to cool off. Well, subsequent to that, of course, with the help of Russia and Iran and Hezbollah, the Syrian army has been able to really wipe out the opposition in almost 100% of the strongholds they had in and around the capital of Damascus. Now they're looking around to see where else they can go to consolidate their gains. And southwest Syria is, of course, one of those areas where the de-escalation zone has existed, but also where some of the troops that have been fighting against the Syrian regime have taken safe haven. The United States and Russia and Jordan were all part of this agreement. The United States has an obligation to enforce the de-escalation zone, as does Russia in its areas. And the particular reason why this becomes so elevated in importance was spelled out very clearly by my colleague, who said that this is the area that is closest, of course, to Israel. And it's the area that could turn into a flashpoint, resulting in large-scale war almost overnight if one side or the other makes the wrong move in this particular area. The real concern, of course, that Israel has at this point is the proximity of Hezbollah and, to a lesser extent, some of the Iranian troops. So we'll see where this goes. But the United States has taken the lead in expressing that it will take seriously its responsibilities to enforce the de-escalation zone.
Mr. Abbas, your thoughts on what Mr. Lane just said. Is the United States obligated to enforce the so-called de-escalation zones?
Yeah, I think that's obviously clearly a problem there, because what we're talking about is the sovereignty of Syria. President Assad and the forces of the government are absolutely entitled to do what they like within the regions of their own, if you like, sovereign jurisdiction. Now, Syria has been effectively occupied by outside forces or by mercenaries. President Assad is perfectly, I think, in his rights to do what he likes within that region. The US, sadly, hasn't been invited into this party. They've invited themselves on the pretext of tackling ISIS. The reality of the matter is also that Israel wants more and more buffer zones. It occupied Golan Heights in that region to create a buffer zone in the first place. Now it's wanting to clearly occupy another area by proxy as a buffer zone. And that's clearly its tactic. But there's another factor in that region, which is to do with the economics of Syria, which will make President Assad very, I think, adamant on retaking that region. The Jordan border represents the trade access to the Gulf states and Jordan itself. So therefore, it makes economic sense for Syria to quickly reoccupy the region of Daraa, as it will give much-needed financial, if you like, respite to the government. What's also, of course, evident is that Israel's incursions into Syria are unacceptable for Syria. They're bombing indiscriminately. They've fired missiles into Syria quite regularly, more regularly over recent months. And that in itself is a violation of Syrian, if you like, sovereignty. So I think that the bottom line is that the US is not really within its rights here. This is a case of the Syrian government, in my opinion, taking back what's theirs.
Mr. Lane, what about the overall risk of escalating the conflict? Heather Nauert said that, quote, we caution the Syrian regime against any actions that risk broadening the conflict or jeopardize a ceasefire, but also warned that the U.S. will take drastic measures in response to violations. I sense a dichotomy in those statements.
Well, I think Secretary Nauert was trying to express pretty clearly to President Assad that his current maneuvers of sending troops into that area, now that they're no longer needed in the Damascus region, is the entity that might lead to the flashpoint. Because if they start again to re-engage troops, and of course they've made the threat through the aerial dropping of leaflets that there could be fatal consequences if the rebels don't put down their arms and surrender. So Secretary Nauert was trying to really express to Mr. Assad that you don't want to do this from the beginning, and if you do it, then the United States will probably take action earlier rather than later to give the Syrian forces an early heads up that they don't want to really go very far down this road. It remains to be seen, of course, what final decision President Trump will make when faced with whatever eventuality of circumstances he is faced with, depending on what Mr. Assad's final maneuvers will be. But I do think that what Secretary Nauert was trying to do was to give an early warning that, you know, there's time to cut this off. Let's not go down this road.
Mr. Abbas, let's focus once again on the location and the strategic importance of Daraa. This province is highly important because, according to reports over the years, it borders the occupied Golan Heights, as you mentioned, and that area has been used, as according to reports, by Israel to treat wounded militants for years. Your thoughts on the strategic importance of that area at this point?
Well, I think it goes a lot further. Let's not forget that Daraa was the cradle of the uprising, the so-called uprising in Syria. There are strong allegations and suspicions that actually that uprising was something that was engineered from outside. There are, for instance, reports certainly on record where the French foreign minister even came to Britain and alleged that the British had been preparing mercenaries 2 years before the uprising in Daraa. 2 years before. These were effectively Islamic militants. They were actually Ikhwan al-Muslimin, Syrian Muslim Brotherhood. And there are many, many other indications that actually this was not some kind of accidental birth of an unrest. It was actually manufactured. Now, isn't it interesting that Daraa is based so close to Israel? Wouldn't it have made very, very easy sense for that to be the location where supplies could have come via Israel, being transported into Daraa to foment the trouble that started this whole civil war, which has cost over 500,000 lives now. This has displaced 11 million people, 5 million people inside Syria, 6 million outside or thereabouts. So Daraa is very significant. It's also significant, as you mentioned, in terms of the geopolitical positioning of that region. You cannot have peace in Damascus. Damascus, the capital of Syria and the base for President Assad, is going to be under continued threat if he doesn't deal with the insurgents and the actual foreign-backed, if you like, mercenaries who are based there. It's just absolutely inconceivable that Syria would leave this region alone. And of course, I mentioned the Jordanian border, which has a huge economic significance. If that border is opened, it means that Syria can get a lifeline through all sorts of trade and other matters.
Mr. Lane, your thoughts on the significance of Daraa province?
Yeah, I mean, it's very important for not just the reasons that my colleague just mentioned, but also for its location just as close to Israel as it gets, which makes it the potential flashpoint again. I think that, you know, I just heard a very articulate explanation as to why President Assad would look next to this area of the country in an attempt to consolidate his country back under his single rule. And a lot of that made sense. I can't argue with the theory behind it at all. But then you have to overlay the reality on it, which is that it is not controlled by Syria. There are other foreign forces there, particularly Hezbollah, which are a direct threat to Israel, or so she and the United States believe. And so the only way, I think, that we're going to see a resolution to this area is a negotiated settlement. The United States, because of our alliance and our obligations to Israel's defense, will not allow the creation of a threat so close to her. And so therefore, if President Assad really wants to consolidate this area of the country back under Damascus rule, what he has to do is pursue talks at the bargaining table, get everybody down, get everybody at the same table, and come to an agreement. I think that stability and peace in that region is certainly the United States objective and certainly the Israeli objective. And if Mr. Assad can convince the parties concerned that that is his objective as well, and he will go along with the provisions of the de-escalation treaty, if you will, that calls for removal of foreign fighters from that area, then I think most people would be happy.
Mr. Abbas, could liberating Dara also deal a blow to Tel Aviv's plans to annex the Golan Heights?
Well, I think there is definitely talk of this. I think there's been talk all week of how the U.S. ought to declare the Golan Heights as well. I think a senator in the U.S. Senate even proposed this, that they should actually just go ahead and recognize, rather like they've recognized Jerusalem as the capital, they should recognize Golan Heights now as a formal part of Israel. You see, of course, this is a violation of the international reality, the international law. It's a violation of Syria's sovereignty again. The bottom line is that the U.S. needs to really consider very carefully. In this traditional alliance that they have had with Israel, in which, let's not forget, every year, for goodness knows how long, the U.S. has been pouring about $4 billion of military aid in order to keep Israel alive. Without this aid, Israel can't function. But for this one state, the U.S. has been held to ransom. It's effectively operating policy in which it's actually alienating itself from the overwhelming majority of that Middle East. It's being hated within that region. It's not economically of benefit to it as well. So why is the U.S. involved in so heavily supporting Israel, given that actually it's not in its own economic or political interests in the long run? I don't think anybody would have a problem with the U.S. in the Middle East if they actually just got on with trading normally with that region, rather than sticking up for Israel, which is clearly in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Syria. It's demonstrated that it has a pugilistic policy. It has an aggressive policy, and it is actually an aggressor. It doesn't suit the U.S. to continue that support, in my opinion. But of course, the lobby groups, the Israel lobby groups in America, run the show, and Congress has to comply with what the Israeli lobbyists want. And that, I'm afraid, is what causes the mess in the Middle East.
Mr. Lane, in case of this U.S. firm and appropriate response, do you think that this time they should be wary of a Russian response?
No, I think the U.S. and Russia have probably worked this part of it out. There are a lot of other areas of conflict and misunderstanding between the U.S. and Russia. But as far as this particular part of the world is concerned, I think that President Putin and President Trump are probably very close to singing from the same sheet of music. I would note that in the last 10 years, maybe even longer, Israel has done an extraordinarily good job of expanding its alliances and its allies worldwide, and has an excellent relationship with Russia. Israel has an excellent relationship with many of the Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and of course Egypt. It's had for a long, long time. So the idea that that it's going to be the whole world against Israel here, I just don't think is a credible assertion. I think that there are a good number of key players in the region and in the world who really hope that Assad does not continue to move troops into this area and eventually launch an attack.
And Mr. Abbas, your thoughts on that issue, a possible Russian response this time to any form of U.S. aggression against Damascus?
I think it's unlikely. I think the Russians have made their, if you like, red lines. Those are quite clear. And it's more concerned, I think, about what's going up in Idlib and the Turkey-Russian, if you like, agreements up there. But down in this little patch, ultimately, I think it is going to be a head-to-head between Assad and, yes, very likely Hezbollah, who have a vested interest in this region, and Israel. And there has been a long-standing bone to pick on the Golan Heights. Israel will not back off from ceding anything to do with its ascendancy within that region. And I think that also President Assad is unlikely to back off. So we're very likely to see an interesting, if you like, development of the battle in this region. And the US weighing in, well, it's likely to be long-range missiles as per their usual acts. But if on the ground President Assad is capable of overturning the balance in that region, then he will ultimately take Daraa.
Mr. Lane, we've got 1 minute for you to wrap up your final thoughts on the issue.
Well, it's coming to a head more rapidly, I think, than most people would like to see. It's the kind of issue where if there was a little bit of time to think about it and for parties to really get together and talk it out, we might be able to avoid armed conflict. But the rapid rate with which the Syrian troops are entering the area and the buildup of the forces and the munitions and things like that leads me to believe that it is President Assad's intent to probably launch some sort of military effort, certainly within a month, maybe within 2 weeks. And that shortened time frame, of course, creates all kinds of increased tension and increases the likelihood that we will see armed conflict. I hope not.
Mr. Abbas in London, 1 minute for you to wrap up your final thoughts.
Well, what we're seeing is really the negotiation of how the map of Syria will look. We're into that phase now where the aftermath of the Syrian civil war is being negotiated. So a lot of what's happening is behind the scenes. It's going on behind closed doors. But still, what happens on the ground ultimately is most important. And if Hezbollah and the Syrian forces can, on the ground, turn over the insurgents or the foreign-backed forces in that region, then I'm afraid that Israel will just have to live with the fact that Syria is back on its doorstep.
All right. Thank you very much. TV journalist Syed Mohsen Abbas joining us from the British capital, London, and president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Mr. Michael Lane, joining us from Washington. Gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for contributing to the program. And that's it with this edition of Press TV's Debate. It's good night, everybody.